ప్రేమస్వరూపులారు.
ఎంబాడిమెంట్స్ ఆఫ్ లవ్.
శాంతి నీ లోపల ఉన్నది కానీ బయట లేదు.
పీస్ ఇస్ విత్ ఇన్, నాట్ అవుట్ సైడ్.
అవుట్ సైడ్ నో పీస్, ఓన్లీ పీసెస్.
Dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashanthi Nilayam, the most happening place on the planet. I always completely feel this in every pore of my being, that Prashanthi is the summum bonum of all the sacred pilgrimage that we can ever do in our lives. This holy hamlet, this holy ambience was gifted to each one of us by Bhagwan on November 23rd, 1950. And I feel from then on, the Sai mission acquired a new dimension. And how much ever we dwell on the glory of this place, the glory of its every facet, it is not enough. Because every day you unearth so many lovely dimensions of this most sacred space on earth. Walk around Prashanthi Nilayam. You will find the birds cooing early in the morning. Look at that huge tree next to the Gayatri temple. Look at that beautiful cover of foliage on the Ganesha temple. Look at that lovely Naga shrines and the tree couple as you enter Prashanthi Nilayam. Breathe in every speck of air of this holy hamlet. And if you can tune in, you can listen to conversations going on. You can listen to the glory of Sai constantly reverberating. Every day this place spellbinds you. Every day it awakens you. Every day it liberates you. And it is for this reason that I thought we should spend more time on the year 1950. That is when Prashanthi Nilayam was inaugurated in this series Satyam Shivam Sundaram. In outside, inside, deep inside, we want to go through Bhagwan's life, the lovely events that unfolded in the years 1950 to 1955. And in the previous few episodes, I have been sharing with you few instances that happened before 1950, because these were some very, very telling stories and I could not resist not sharing them with you. There are a few people who have documented, thanks to Bhagwan's mercy on us, we have some documentation, and going forward today we will talk about this also, about this blessing of Bhagwan also. I shared with you some instances that Srimati and Lakshmi Devamma has documented in the previous episode of Outside, Inside, Deep Inside in this series, Satyam, Shivam, Sundaram. And also I narrated some powerful anecdotes from the book Sri Satya Sai, Anandadai, written by Mrs. Karunamba Ramamurthy. Before I tell you more stories that she has documented and some of the devotees of that era have penned down, very few people were so blessed to convert their mental diaries into physical for the benefit of humanity, benefit and joy of each one of us. But before I go to 1950, I want to share with you a couple of instances again from 1949, because I feel these are not ordinary stories. It was the Shivratri of 1949, and Swami asked a friend of the family of Mrs. Karunamba Ramamurthy. This friend had gone to Puttaparthi along with Kannamma's family. Mrs. Karunamba Ramamurthy used to be fondly called as Kannamma. So when Swami saw this friend of Kannamma's family, Swami asked this person, "Have you joined the military?" And this person said, "Yes, yes, Swami." Bhagavan immediately said, I know why you have come here." And even though Bhagavan had seen this person and Karunamba Ramamurthy's family the previous day, Swami had not spoken to this person. What had happened is that this problem, this person was into a problem. He had submitted a fraudulent travel allowance bill. He had gone to Shimla alone to attend an interview for the post of clerks. But when he claimed the traveling allowance, he claimed the railway fare not only for himself but for his entire family. And now this fraud was noticed sometime later and an inquiry was instituted. Now this person, when he came to know of these developments, he became very tense because he belonged to a very respectable family, and this whole incident of him getting exposed was very, very insulting for him. He thought he has to live his life in disgrace, and he did not know how to protect himself from this fraud that he has committed. He was very worried of the image that this will project about him, even though he had been a nice person, but for some reason he did this wrong, and now this was not escaping the eyes of the officials. He did not know what to do, and he rushed to the house of Karunamba Ramamurthy and he requested Kannamma's husband to take him to Swami, because he had heard that Swami can cure people's malady, Swami can come to the rescue of people. There are so many stories going around of how Swami had helped this person, Swami had taken that other person out of the trouble, and so he thought, if one person who can help me, then it is Swami. So he came with Kannamma's family to Puttaparthi. So Bhagavan called the next day Kannamma's husband to call the friend. And when Kannamma's husband started looking for this friend, Swami said, okay, wait, don't worry. He has gone to the riverside. He has gone to Chitravati. He will return. Don't worry. So when this person returned, Swami called him aside and Swami told him, I know the wrong that you have done, but since you have done a wrong thing for the first time, I will save you. But do not repeat this in your life. And then Bhagwan said, if the police come to arrest you, submit yourself. Do not protest. Do not again commit one more error. Do not again commit one more act of untruth. If the police comes to arrest you, Swami said, submit yourself. Submit yourself. I will protect you. Have that faith. I will protect you. Submit yourself. Have no fear. And stay at home. Don't go anywhere. Just stay at home. But have no fear. So even before that friend could tell Swami anything, Bhagwan assured him of his protection. Perhaps it was the fortune of this person to receive such a blessing, perhaps because he came to Swami, perhaps because at least he believed that Swami can rescue me. Swami applied vibhuti on his forehead, and once this person returned, he just started praying to Swami incessantly, because he did not want the police to come to his home and arrest him, because if the police come, Swami had told, submit yourself. So he did not know what is going to happen. So every day he was praying to Swami, and that whole thought of him getting arrested was so disgusting and so disgraceful that, you know, he was many times even thinking, I will commit suicide, but I will not live a life of such disgrace. Those were the dark thoughts that were engulfing his mind. And every day he used to pray to Swami, Swami, please save me, save me. Even though Swami had told, have no fear, but there was that concern every day, because Swami had told, if the police come, submit yourself. Days passed, weeks passed, and the police did not come. And every day he used to spend his days in worry, until the day he got the information from his friends in Shimla that for some unknown reason the inquiry against him has been dropped. The inquiry has been dropped. The chapter is closed. Only when he heard this, he started breathing normally, and he came back to Swami again, and this time he was with his wife. His wife was very devoted to Swami, and they had Bhagwan's darshan in the house of Sri Tiruvengadagam. Tiruvengadagam, Venkatadam. Tiruvengadam, Shetty, in Bengaluru. And Swami had told this person that whenever you come next time, come along with your wife. And that is the reason why he was now in Bengaluru with his wife. And when he went for Bhagwan's darshan, Swami looked at his wife, looked at this person, and Swami said, if the wife is a pativrata, her prayers to the Lord to ward off dangers to her husband will definitely be answered. Swami said, if the wife is a pure soul, if she is chaste, then her prayers to the Lord to protect her husband will be answered by the Lord. Bhagwan revealed this to this friend of Kanama's family. The power of a woman's purity to draw the grace of the divine. that was one very powerful lesson, one powerful example, a life instance when Bhagwan made known the power of the chastity of a lady. When divine grace is bestowed upon us, many times we never know the reason. There could be so many reasons. In this case, it was the prayers, the purity and the nobility of the wife. In some other case, it could be the prayer of a concerned mother. In the third case, it could be the merit of an ancestor. For some other person, it could be the prayer of a well-wisher. It could be the good wishes earned by doing good to others, by doing good to someone in need. We never know how these goodness that is in us and around us protects us. When God blesses us, we hardly have any clue of the dynamics behind it. And there are also instances when the kind Lord will simply bless. He does not need a reason. He will simply, out of His infinite mercy, just take care of you because perhaps your prayer was that powerful. But rare are the occasions when Swami reveals the reason for the blessing that we have received. He opens the curtain, He parts the curtain and tells us, this is the reason why I have blessed you this time. This is the reason why you are getting this beautiful opportunity. And because most of the times we do not know, we cannot understand the acts of the divine. We do not know why He sometimes blesses us, why He sometimes takes away our troubles, why He sometimes so beautifully He clears all the obstacles in our way, why He sometimes suddenly times the things in our life so perfectly that at the nick of time we are saved from an accident, at the nick of time we are saved from an impending danger. And there are also times when we cannot understand why He does not seem to act, why He does not seem to respond to our prayers, why He does not seem to clear a long pending issue, why He does not seem to solve a problem we have been dealing with for years. But what we do know is that He is the most compassionate and He will do what is best for us, what is in our best interest, and He will do it at the right time, in the right manner, in the most beautiful way. And we will never ever know the reason. We will never know the dynamics behind it. For almost most of the time, God cannot keep explaining to us why He is doing. We just have to trust. And we know that whatever He does, it is only to add to our happiness.
Sab sukh data sai, bhagya vidhata sai.
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 Radha Raman sai Ranga,
Radha Raman sai Ranga,
Radha Raman sai Ranga.
Sai Ranga,
చింతన సాయే రంగా
సుఖదాతా సాయి భాగ్య విధాతా సాయి కరచింతన సాయిరంగా కరవందన్ సాయిరంగా. దిస్ ఫ్రేజ్ యాజ్ ఐ వాజ్ థింకింగ్ అబౌట్ దీస్ ఇన్స్టెన్సెస్ దీస్ లైన్స్ జస్ట్ ఫిల్ మై మైండ్. సబ సుఖ దాతా సాయి భాగ్య విధాతా సాయి, హౌ మెనీ లైఫ్స్ స్వామి హ్యాస్ టచ్డ్ అండ్ ఫిల్ దెమ్ విత్ హ్యాపీనెస్, అండ్ హౌ మెనీ లైఫ్స్ హీ హ్యాస్ ట్రాన్స్ఫార్మ్డ్ అండ్ రీక్రియేటెడ్ ది డెస్టినీస్ into glorious ones of you, me, and scores and hundreds. Kannamma's mother, Srimati Namagiri Amma, incidentally, Mother Ishwaramma's name also, earlier was Namagiri Amma. So Namagiri Amma started staying in Puttaparthi in 1954. Even though now Prashanthi Nilayam was in vogue and Swami was staying in the new mandir, which was inaugurated in 1950, Swami would visit the old mandir quite often and Swami would talk to the inmates there. Swami had not snapped all the connections from the old mandir. On one occasion in 1954, Swami asked Namagiri Amma, "Are you keeping a note of your experiences here?" Because she came to Swami way back in the 40s and Swami asked her, "Are you keeping a note of your experiences?" And she said, "No, Swami." Swami said, "Do it. Keep a note of your experiences." Swami also gave a reason. Swami said, "After 40-50 years, my devotees will ask you about them. Do you think you'll be able to recollect all these experiences then? That is why, start writing them now." I feel this was a landmark moment. This was an act of immense compassion of Bhagwan. Swami alerting Namagiri Amma to document. There are so many devotees who had the opportunity to bask in those beautiful moments with Swami. And every day Swami was going to the Chitravati. Every day there was leelas happening. It was the leela phase of Swami. Every day there was something mystical, something magical. Every day Swami was spending most of his time right from morning 4:35 when Swami used to come out from darshan. He used to give interviews continuously and he was just with the devotees all the time. Long bhajan sessions and whoever came to Prashantalayam, they were getting an interview. So those were the moments when every day there was something absolutely spellbinding happening. And we don't have documentation of those absolutely golden days of living in physical proximity of Bhagwan, but it is Swami's compassion that Swami had told Kannamma to write down. And it is because Kannamma and someone like Kuppam Vijayamma Garu, they have written down some of these instances that when we read them, we are in bliss, we find it so thrilling, we are so enthralled reading these stories. It almost always takes you back to the days of Krishna and the Krishna Leelas. We don't have anybody who documented Krishna Leela. We don't have any Gopi or Gopala to actually give us live description of what it was to live. Whatever we are relishing about the Krishna stories, what the saints and sages have given us through their meditations. And of course, now Bhagwan has revealed so many beautiful anecdotes. Otherwise, we don't have first person account of what happened, how it is to be with Krishna, but thanks to devotees like Namagiri Amma, Kannamma and Vijayamma, at least we have some documentation, some live narration of those halcyon days of being with Bhagwan. Because Swami knows that a time will come when people will be longing for such stories. People will be pining to listen to these drops of nectar. And that is the reason why I feel it is so historic a moment when Bhagwan had alerted Namagiri Amma to note down her moments with Swami. And even though Bhagwan had told Namagiri Amma then, you know, at that point in time, she also did not take it so seriously, because there's so few devotees, you cannot even think that, you know, you in time hundreds of devotees are going to come. You will always think that, you know, this is going to be like this. This is our Swami and we will be having this joy to be with our Swami, and you almost get carried away with the human aspect of Swami. And in fact, after Swami told Namagiri Amma, 2 years after that, she mentioned this to her daughter in Mysore. And after that, Kannamma started jotting down all the instances. She started writing in Kannada. And later on, it was translated. And it is because of that hint from Swami, that direction from Swami, that we are today soaking in the joy of these beautiful experiences. So in this program, Satyam Shivam Sundaram, in Outside, Inside, Deep Inside, we will draw upon a lot from these beautiful timeless tales recorded by Kannamma, Vijayamma, and of course Professor Kasturi and many other such blessed souls. Here and there we are trying to collect every drop of nectar that we can gather, because this is what is our energy, our sustenance for every soul that reverberates with the name and the form and the beauty of Sai. So 1950, as I said, is the year when Bhagwan gifted Prashanti Nilayam to the world. But the story of Prashanti started from Shankranti, from the Shankranti 2 years before that, from the Pongal festival of 1948. On the morning of January 14, 1948, Swami laid the foundation stone of the Prashanti Nilayam Mandir, and the events that preceded this landmark moment and the occurrences that happened during the groundbreaking ceremony, the foundation stone laying ceremony, were simply out of the world. Mrs. Sakama, the coffee planter and philanthropist from Bengaluru, who was an ardent devotee of Bhagwan, she requested Swami to have a bigger and better place. She even expressed a desire, saying that, Swami, I will build an ashram for you in Bangalore. It will really be convenient for people from all parts of the country to come and see you in Bangalore, because it is so difficult to come to Puttaparthi. Puttaparthi is so remote. But Swami said, no. The ashram will be built in Puttaparthi itself. In fact, recalling this many years later during his birthday discourse in 1960, Swami said, on many occasions devotees have pleaded with me to move out of this little hamlet and settle down in Bangalore or Chennai or in any other quiet place. But let me tell you, Swami said, let me tell you here and now, this tree has to grow at the very spot where it sprouted. It will not be transplanted. I shall not give up this place. Never, ever. This is Bhagwan declaring, I shall never give up this place, Prashanthi Nilayam, never, ever. This place will be transformed into a Tirupati. Those who are little boys and girls today will surely see it in their lifetime, the magnificence of Prashanthi Nilayam. And that is what happened. I think this is such a profound declaration by Bhagwan. Swami is telling, I will never give up this place, and this is going to be the center of the Satya Sai Avataric Mission. So on July 24th, 1947, Mrs. Sakama offered to Bhagwan the 3.86 acres of land that she had acquired in Puttaparthi, and this was her prayerful token of love. And once that happened, Swami set out on his task of planning the new mandir. In fact, one day while sitting on the banks of Chitravati, Swami himself sketched out the plan of the proposed mandir on the sand. And then, looking at all the devotees around, Swami prophetically said, hundreds and thousands from all corners of the world will come to Puttaparthi. This will become the pilgrimage center of the world. So there were so many such prophetic words that Bhagwan had made during those times, only to help people understand that what they are going through is nothing ordinary. On the new year of 1948, January 14th, as I mentioned, Swami laid the foundation stone. And during the groundbreaking ceremony, when the earth was broken, Swami materialized pearls and several precious stones. And the sacred foundation stone of Prashanthi Nilayam was placed on these mystical creations that Bhagwan had brought out of thin air. So the mandir was built on these pearls and precious stones. That evening, Swami took the group of devotees to the Chitravati riverbed, and as he moved around with them, he materialized a big slab of sugar candy, and he gave it to a devotee to distribute it to all. And as that devotee was giving these pieces of sugar candy to everyone, Swami again said, in times to come, I will be visible to you as a matchbox. You will only see my dress from far, far away. And all these devotees who had heard this from Bhagwan lived to see that day, because there came a day when there was a sea of humanity and they were just somewhere looking at Bhagwan from miles away, just as an orange robe. Perhaps Bhagwan had to reveal these at that point in time, because everyone around at that period was unable to understand and unable to wrap their head around what was happening. Everyone was thinking, why Swami is building such a big temple? Why do we need such a huge structure? This is crazy. In fact, not just devotees, even Swami's own mother, Mother Isharama, felt that Swami was overdoing it. And in fact, one day she went to Swami. She was the most aggrieved at what she considered Swami's determination to keep Puttaparthi at arm's length. She thought, why Swami is moving away from the village? Because as it is, the old mandir was at the fringe of the village. The old mandir was already in the outskirts of the village, given where the village was. And she felt that that is enough. That is already so spacious. Why is Swami going half kilometer away, and why is he building such a new and big site? And so one day she could not contain herself and she went to Swami, and there were devotees from Kuppam who were around Bhagwan, and Isharama could not control herself and she said, Swami, what is this I hear? They say that you are going to build a new mandir on that hill. How can you go to a spot that is so far from the village? A place that is surrounded by jungles and filled with snakes and scorpions. How will people who are old and sick and mothers with tiny children, how will they come to you? Are you not going to take care of their problems? Are you not going to be bothered about their troubles? Are you going to deny them your darshan? Why are you building a temple so far away? Who is going to come there? It is a God-forsaken place. What is the fate of all those people who will come to you in the future? And then Mother Isharama says, I know. You have that mark of wheel under your foot, the symbol of chakra, Vishnu chakra. The insignia of Lord Vishnu was always on Bhagwan's feet. Said, I have seen you have that mark of chakra under your foot, and that is the reason why you will keep moving from place to place. And she went on. Every day you have to keep moving because that chakra is on your feet. You are either climbing a hill or crossing a river or going to a new place. Every time you are on the move, which God-forsaken place have you found now? Don't you know that you must consult astrologers before you think of moving anywhere? This mandir is enough for you. It is better you have a small place which is filled with people than have a huge building which is half empty. So this is how Mother Isharama was on a rampage. I mean, it is the concern of the mother. A mother, first of all, can never ever stomach the feeling that the child is going away. And when you have a child like Swami and he's going to a new mandir and he wants to leave everyone and he wants to leave in a very secluded atmosphere, why is he going away? The mother could not just reconcile with this development, and she just was in a torrent of protest. And Swami heard everything. Swami did not say a word. Very patiently, Swami allowed her to speak whatever was there in her heart. And when she finished, Swami simply smiled. And Swami said, why do you bother with such people's talk? Why do you bother about what others say? Listen, there will be no jungle, there won't be any forest there, there will not be any snakes there. Once I go there, everything will be clear. Hundreds of pilgrims will be coming in every day. This place will become a Shirdi, it will become a Kashi, it will become a Tirupati, believe me. Swami tried to reason it out with Mother Isharama, but Mother Isharama was not convinced and she felt that this was not needed. Swami is just going over the board trying to create another mandir. So Mother Isharama goes to her eldest son, Sheshma Raju Garu, and she says, you must do something, you must persuade Swami not to go to Puttaparthi Mandir. Why is he building a new Mandir? And that is when Sheshma Raju Garu writes a letter to Swami voicing the protests of the family. But the letter that he receives in reply renders him absolutely breathless and speechless. Because Swami simply says in that letter, don't consider me as your son any longer. I am not a member of your family. I am not here to listen to the advices of this little family into which I descended. Swami said, it is the result of my own will that I came as a man among men, and I have come to liberate you. I have come to liberate both the good and the bad from misery. And Swami said, millions are going to come from the four quarters of the world seeking me. And there will come a time when people will be standing at the far edge of the crowd. If they are able to stand at the far edge of the crowd itself, they will consider themselves lucky. If they get a darshan, a glimpse itself of the orange speck from a distance, they would thank their stars. Even though Bhagavan said all this, the mother was never convinced. The mother thought, millions will come. How will that happen? Here, to Puttaparthi? Millions? What is he saying? If they come, where will they stand? Where will they stay? What is this that this Swami is saying? And Madhuri Sharma was very worried, and you know, she didn't know what to do. She had tried everything within her means, and now she started praying to the gods. It is ironical, but what could do as a very, very concerned mother? She started praying to the gods to somehow ensure that nothing alarming happens to Swami. She was all the time worried because there were all these people spreading stories that, you know, the powers that Swami is having, it will slowly wither away. He's using it more and more. Somebody else said, no, no, this is not a good sign. Every time when he's more people are coming, then it only means that there is more danger that is going to happen to him. So all these things, the villagers, out of jealousy, out of ignorance, they were filling the mother's ears, and a mother is all the time so concerned about the safety, the security of her son, and that is the reason why she went to Swami again, and she said, no, Swami, don't build this. And when she said to Swami all these things that people are talking about you, Swami said, oh, why are you listening to all these people? I have to make everyone happy. I have come only for this purpose. I have come to lead the poor and the miserable into Ananda. Their ananda is the food that sustains me. Their happiness is my food. Don't be so worried. Swami tried to console and reassure the mother. So when Puttaparthi was being constructed, there were these concerns. And as I said, it was not the mother alone. Every devotee felt the same. Most of the devotees felt the same, right from Sakamma to the Raja Venkatgiri. In fact, the Raja Venkatgiri had come during the Bukkapatnam school ceremony, Bukkapatnam school inauguration, and there he was staying in the Bukkapatnam guest house, and he used to visit Puttaparthi from there. And in fact, when the Mandir construction started, and one day he went and saw the size of the bhajan hall, then he went to Swami and said, Swami, why are you building such a huge building here? It's not needed. This is too huge a structure. And Swami only smiled. Swami did not say anything to the Raja. In fact, in the June of 1950, Swami announced that he was going to name the new Mandir Prashanti Nilayam. Nobody around could have imagined such a building in that wilderness. But Swami declared his intention to Lakshmaya. He was someone who loved Swami very much, even though he was not fully convinced of Swami's divinity. It's very difficult to think that this person who is there with us day and night is really the supreme divine principle. So the Maya used to always overpower the thinking of and the experience of people. So this Lakshmaya loved Swami very much. And one day when Swami was walking with Lakshmaya through the hillocks that skirted Puttaparthi, Swami just stopped at a point and Swami pointed towards the south of that hillock and Swami said, "The Sai Pravesh, the advent, the entrance of Sai will transform this region into Prashanti Pradesh. Sai Pradesh will transform this hill into Prashanti Pradesh, into a region of highest peace. There will rise a bhavan," Swami said. "There will rise a mansion. Lakhs of people from all over India," why only India? "From all over the world will come and wait for Sai Darshan." This is what Swami revealed to Lakshmaya as the construction was going on. "Lakhs of people will come and the Sai Pravesh will convert this into Prashanti Pravesh." And then when Lakshmaya, like many others, expressed his doubt, Swami said, "You will have to believe it when you stand where you are standing right now to catch a glimpse of me in the years to come. I will be on the porch of that mansion and you'll be standing here just to get a glimpse of me." That is how little by little Bhagwan had prepared these people of the times to come so that they get involved in the making of Prashanti Nilayam. The Prashanti Nilayam, which is the abode of the Sri Satya Sai incarnation, and the Lord loved to be called as Prashanti Nivasi.
Prashanti Nivasi, Nivasi Nandala. ज्योति हे ज्योति नंदला हे अंतरात्म ज्योति हे ज्योति नंदला हे अंतरात्म ज्योति हे ज्योति नंदला सत्यम शिवम शिवम सुंदरम
Prashanti Nivasi, Nivasi Nandalal, He Sundara Rupa, He Sai Nandalal. This bhajan just flooded my mind as I was thinking about this beautiful instance of Bhagwan revealing about Prashant Lam and how he loved to be here, associate himself with here, and fill this place with so much love that today it is the most love-charged place on the planet. And how Bhagwan built the mandir brick by brick is such a powerful story. The chosen instrument to build the edifice was Mr. M.S. Tirumala Iyengar, a senior architect of renowned fame of the time. Between 1944 and 1952, he was in charge of the Tungabhadra Dam project, a gigantic 6,000 feet long and 160 feet high masonry dam reservoir of 3 million acre feet capacity. In fact, it was during this period, through Transport Commissioner Hanumant Rao, that Mr. Iyengar came to Bhagwan. Later, of course, after the completion and inauguration of the Prashant Nilayam Mandir in 1950, Mr. Iyengar went on to build the infrastructural pride of the state of Odisha, the Hirakud Dam, the largest dam in India with a 7 million acre feet capacity and 200,000 kilowatt power potential. So he was a very, very distinguished and experienced engineer whom Bhagwan had picked for the construction of Prashant Nilayam way back in the 40s. You know, the India had just acquired independence, and once the foundation stone was laid, Mr. Iyengar next searched around the riverbeds of Chitravati for a sizable rock that could be broken into blocks and used for the Prashanti Mandir walls. And he did find one rock. It was a rock 60 feet high and 100 feet in diameter, and now he wanted to blow this up using dynamite. Back then, that was the way rocks and hills were usually broken to create construction material out of them. When Mr. Iyengar sought Bhagwan's permission for this, Swami said, "Wait, wait." And very interestingly, the very next day, there was a huge downpour accompanied by lightning and thunders. And during this downpour, a powerful thunderbolt suddenly flashed from the skies and struck this rock with such maddening velocity that the rock instantly broke into pieces. And the construction material was ready for Tirumala Iyengar, the Prashanti Mandir. That is why it is indeed a miracle. Every aspect of it is spellbinding. Every aspect of it is out of the ordinary. Slowly, skilled stone cutters and workers adept in stone dressing came from Coimbatore. There were masons who arrived from Bengaluru. There was a devotee from Mysore who supplied timber. Carpenters came from Bangalore Timber Depot, and they were working on the doors, on the door frames, on the windows. And what is most moving is Swami himself would tie a towel or a scarf around his head, and Swami would personally supervise the mandir's construction. There were a series of impediments, and there were these repeated raising and dashing of plans and hopes. Sometimes when the plans were ready, funds were not enough. When the funds were ready, there were some other difficulties in logistics and transportation. If Bhagwan wanted, he could have just waved his hand and created the edifice. But no, he was showing by example how even when troubles come, how you can face these troubles and how it's natural to get these hurdles. But with faith in God, with God by your side, you can achieve anything. And that is the reason why anyone can take up noble tasks and get it done. It was absolutely difficult because it is one thing to get a huge structure like the Prashanti Mandir being built in a city like Bengaluru or Mysuru, and it's another thing to build it in an hamlet where nothing has ever travelled on the roads except bullock carts. And now you want to build such a huge structure there? But the work was going on. The proper titles for additional designated land had been acquired, and heavy building material had been ordered. And the day of inauguration was also set for November 23rd. There was this huge girder, 40 feet in height, 40 feet in length, which was needed for the central prayer hall, and it had come from Tiruchirappalli to Penukonda by train, and Hanumant Rao, the transport commissioner of Madras State, as it was called then, had arranged to obtain the girders. It was the July-August 1950, and it was a challenging task now to transport the girders to Puttaparthi from the railway station at Penukonda, which is 36 kilometers away. The story of the girder is documented by Professor Kasturi, and it is something which perhaps many of us know, but it is such a fantastic story, I cannot not share this when I am talking about Puttaparthi. Once the girders had arrived at the railway station at Penukonda, how to transport from Penukonda to Bukkapatnam through the narrow road? The narrow road meandered through villages and these huts and narrow passages had to be maneuvered through. There were dilapidated culverts, low-level causeways. There was broad expanse of sand to cover Chitravati sands. And the engineer said, "Swami, it is not possible." He just gave up hope. And he said, "Swami, let us figure out some other way of doing the roofing of the prayer hall, because it is impossible to get those girders." Swami said, "Nothing doing. We are going to get the girders." And one morning, the road transport officer of Anandpur district, who was a devotee of Bhagwan, saw a unique sight in front of his house. There was a huge crane belonging to a big construction company, and it was there for use at the Tungabhadra dam construction site, and that had been parked there overnight because it had broken down. The driver was frantically trying to repair it, and the driver did not know what to do, so he sought the help of this transport officer. And the transport officer said, "Okay, let me see if I can do something, but on a condition, if I repair it, can the crane transport these girders from the Penukonda railway station to Puttaparthi?" And the officer said, "Okay, no problem, we will do that." And so this transport officer came to Puttaparthi, and listening to his prayer, Swami materialized Vibhuti and gave it to him. And the officer came back and smeared the Vibhuti on the engine of the crane, and the defunct engine sprung back to life. I mean, imagine, you're just pouring Vibhuti on the engine and the engine roars to life again. And the surprised driver of that crane now brought the girders, lifted the girders with his giant arms and proceeded to Puttaparthi. And Puttaparthi villagers were awestruck seeing such a huge mechanical, movable locomotive in Puttaparthi. They had never seen anything like that before. And so they were just looking up at this huge metallic giant bringing these girders. And that is how the crane successfully made it to the Karnataka Nagapalli hill, but it could not come beyond it. Karnataka Nagapalli is still 2-3 kilometers away. And finally, Swami himself went to the crane. He sat next to the driver and himself handled the steering of the crane. Imagine Swami himself handling. I mean, he could have just willed it also, but look at the beautiful play of Bhagwan. How Swami is showing the involvement, the absolute deep involvement of Bhagwan to make Prashandalam, to gift this Prashandalam to all of us. And once the crane was activated by the touch of Swami, the crane moved on and the train deposited this girder at the work spot in Prashandalam. Well, the crane had come, but the crane had to be lifted. The girder had come. The girder had to be lifted across the walls into their positions. And that was again another challenge. And again, that was overcome too by Bhagwan's grace. And how that happened, we will talk about this in the coming episode of Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. In this series, Satyam, Shivam, Sundaram. I know this is perhaps an incident which all of you, or some of you, are aware, but I could not repeat it, because there are very beautiful, powerful lessons, and it is so much tied to the history and the glory and the blossoming of Prashantanilam. So we'll continue this and we'll move on from there towards the inauguration of Prashanthaniam, and there, from there, to the events that happened in 1950, 51, 52, in the coming episodes of Satyam, Shivam, Sundaram, in outside, inside, deep inside. Thank you so much. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu. If you have any queries, as always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. You can also send your comments on our WhatsApp number 9393-258-258. Thank you so much. Sai Ram.